So you're a tough guy, like you really rough guy. Just can't get enough guy, just always so puff guy. I'm that bad type, make your mama sad type. Make your girlfriend mad type, might seduce your dad type. I'm the bad guy.
Duh.
Chapter 27. It was early in the morning on Christmas Eve, and Max Kennedy was finally dead. Jason sat on the roof of his warehouse reading the police report Roy had sent him with relish. Kennedy had been stabbed 16 times in his cell and had died before medical attention arrived. The police suspected Maroney, but so far no evidence had been recovered to link him or one of his men to the crime. It didn't have quite the same amount of satisfaction as ending the man himself, but it was still pretty damn satisfying. Jason slipped his phone back into his belt and congratulated himself on a job well done. He'd followed everyone's rules, and Kennedy was dead without Jason having to break his agreement. Not too damn shabby, all things considered. Things in Crime Alley remained relatively calm after Donald. All the kids were currently sleeping safe and warm beneath his feet. Sasha, Holly, and the others were safe and keeping warm as well. Jason's bruises were mostly healed up, and his knee was only a little sore. His countertops, new sink, and cabinets had been delivered to his loft, and though Jason hadn't installed any of it yet, he had gotten the island in place, and it looked pretty damn good. The catering companies he'd contacted for Christmas dinner at the warehouse had confirmed, and would be ready for delivery. Dick was still keeping his distance, and Jason had found good Christmas presents for Corey and Alfred. And though he hadn't decided on Roy's gift just yet, he had a few ideas, so it was only a matter of time. Things were actually pretty decent for once, which made Jason think everything was bound to go to shit at any moment. That was pretty much the way his life worked, after all. Still, it'd be really nice if just this once life would cut him some slack. After all, it was Christmas time. Surely life could throw him a bone at Christmas. That's what Christmas miracles were all about, right? Jason stood and stretched his back muscles, preparing to give the streets of Crime Alley one more pass-through before he headed back to his loft to get some sleep. As he stretched, something caught his eye and he paused. Sometime in the past 24 hours, one block down on the side of a tall brick building, someone had painted a mural. Jason didn't know how he hadn't noticed it earlier, because there was nothing obstructing it, and it was rather striking. It was a mural of the Red Hood, painted like a traditional Catholic icon image of one of the patron saints. He had a golden halo behind his red helmeted head, and he was crossing pistols over his chest. The armor wasn't completely accurate, but it was pretty good for someone who obviously hadn't been able to inspect it closely. The border of the icon image was made up of assorted firearms and grenades, and at the bottom of the mural, written in large, painted letters, was Saint Jerome Emiliani. Huh, Jason said, grabbing his phone to do some quick research. He wasn't really up to date on his Catholic saints. Saint Jerome Emiliani, patron saint of abandoned children and orphans. Huh, Jason said again, looking up at the mural and then back down at his phone as a warm, surprised feeling began spreading through his chest. Curiously, he scrolled through the article, reading about a man who'd been a soldier, then imprisoned, then escaped, only to devote the rest of his life to helping abandoned kids. Not only did he take in homeless children and start orphanages, he was also a safe haven for prostitutes in need of help. "Well, damn," Jason muttered, voice a little tight as the warm feeling grew in his chest. For maybe the first time since he'd worn the tights, Jason felt truly proud of himself. He'd been through a lot of shit, and it had messed him up pretty bad. But despite all of that, he was doing good work. He was a protector, and he was looking after his people, and holy hell, he was actually appreciated for it. It was so rare for him to feel appreciated instead of condemned. But here in Crime Alley, he was what the people needed, Not Batman, not Robin, and definitely not Nightwing. People needed the Red Hood. It was a pretty damn good feeling. Jason snapped a picture of the huge mural and sent it off to Roy, who replied almost immediately. Roy.
Somebody's got fans. Good job, Jaybird.
Jason smirked and saved the picture as his phone background. He could use the positive reminder, the next time being back in Gotham started to feel overwhelming. He was startled out of the moment by his phone vibrating, and he answered it quickly.
Jason, it's Clark. I'm in Gotham. Can we meet?
Jason blinked for a moment, shaking himself out of his reverie.
Yeah, meet me in Crime Alley. I'm on top of a warehouse. You'll find me, he replied easily. Thanks. See you in a minute.
Jason hung up, and sure enough, in less than a minute, Superman was landing on the roof of his warehouse.
What's up, Super Scout? Jason greeted easily, making a concerted effort to keep his body language relaxed. Though he could already sense things going to shit.
He doubted there was a good reason for the visit. Maybe Gordon was blaming Jason for Kennedy's death. Maybe he'd called in Superman. Or maybe it was Donald. Since Gordon hadn't managed to get a hold of Jason, maybe he'd decided to get Superman to do it for him.
Jason,
Superman greeted easily. Then he caught sight of the mural and smiled a little.
Got fans?
Looks like, Jason replied. Superman hesitated, and Jason waited warily.
Bruce is back in Gotham, he said,
and Jason immediately stiffened. That was so much worse than Gordon. Clark continued like he hadn't just knocked Jason's entire world off kilter.
I wanted to give you a heads up. Also, he knows everything.
What? What do you mean, everything? Jason demanded, as the last dregs of the warm feeling was chased out of his chest, replaced totally and completely with dread.
I mean everything, Superman said pointedly, and Jason jerked in realization.
What the fuck? He swore furiously. Are you fucking serious right now? Clark winced, and that was answer enough. Jason snarled. That wasn't his fucking business, Superman. What the actual fuck? How? Why?
Superman shrugged and didn't look the slightest bit repentant as he replied, He's Batman.
Like that was answer enough on its own. And God help them all, it really was. Bruce probably hadn't even thought twice. Jason threw his hands up in the air, swearing violently. He's Batman and he's a fucking hypocrite who doesn't fucking respect other people's fucking privacy. That wasn't his business, damn it. It's my fucking life. He doesn't just get to help himself to whatever parts of it he wants.
I know you're angry, Superman began, and in a placating voice, and it only pissed Jason off more.
Jason stomped towards him. He'd punch Superman in the face if it wouldn't break his fucking hand. Damn fucking right I'm angry. Why the hell wouldn't I be angry, you asshole? Who the fuck gave Bruce the right? Who gave you the right?
Superman remained infuriatingly calm. You knew he'd figure out you were in Gotham eventually, and you knew that once he did, he'd gather every scrap of information he could. It's who he is, he pointed out. Besides, this doesn't change anything. So what if he knows? You were allowed to be here. You aren't breaking any rules.
That's not the point, and I doubt he sees it that way.
Jason snarled. Superman shrugged. Then he can take it up with me, but I don't think it'll be a problem. If I'm wrong, and it is, you have people on your side. I'm on your side, Jason. It's going to be fine.
Jason couldn't handle this right now. This was a nightmare. It had to be. A nightmare that was causing him a migraine. A migraine that could only be cured by shooting someone in the face. Preferably Bruce. All of this would go away if he could just shoot Bruce in the face. But the thing was, the awful, terrible, shitty thing, was that this whole shit show wasn't even entirely unexpected. Jason had been avoiding thinking about Bruce and what his eventual return would mean, simply because Bruce was not conducive to him pulling his life together. But if Jason were to be completely honest with himself, he'd have to admit that he'd been expecting this from the moment he realized Superman and Martian Manhunter had seen all of his worst fucking memories.
There wasn't a version of events that didn't end with that knowledge being used against him in some way. He had no reason to trust anyone outside of Roy and Corey, and Superman and Manhunter's loyalty would go to Bruce before Jason. The only thing that was really surprising was how long it had taken them, so he wasn't really surprised. But he certainly was angry. Expected or not, that kind of shattering of privacy was not okay. And here was Clark fucking Kent looking at him with fucking sympathy in his gaze, like Jason was something to be pitied, like he hadn't just single-handedly screwed him over in revealing all his horrible things to the last person in the entire world he would want to see them. All at once, his fury erupted into rage, because goddamn Clark Kent, thinking he was fucking above everyone, that he had the fucking right to make these decisions for other people, just like fucking Bruce. Jason would empty both clips right into Superman's face if it wouldn't unnecessarily spook the kids. God, he wanted to make him hurt. He wanted to make him understand that he didn't have the right, that Bruce didn't have the right. He wanted Superman to understand what it was like to experience that sort of violation of privacy. And in that moment, Jason decided what he was going to get Roy for Christmas. Breaking into the Fortress of Solitude wouldn't make up for it, but it was a start. They violated Jason's privacy, he'd fucking desecrate Superman's sanctuary. "Jason," Superman began in a gentle tone. Jason wouldn't put up with it. "Get out of my town," he snapped angrily. "Jason," he said, still trying to placate him. He snarled, "Leave now!" Jason hesitated a moment before ultimately giving in. "Merry Christmas, Jason," he spoke gently as he rose into the air. "Go fuck yourself," Jason retorted furiously. The second he was gone, Jason let himself drop into a sitting position. He pulled his helmet off, dropping his head and dug his fingers into his hair. He felt sick. Sick and angry and utterly overwhelmed. It would have been bad enough just having Bruce back in Gotham, but now this? Bruce knew everything. How the hell did he even know everything? Had Clark told him, or had Bruce seen? Fuck, what if he had? Jason felt almost hysterical just at the thought of Bruce seeing. It wasn't right. Bruce didn't get to have his memories. He didn't get to have his past. It was Jason's, and no one had the right to it. No one. Jason felt sick, and he abruptly couldn't stomach the thought of being in the same city as Batman and the rest of them. He hadn't signed up for this, and he wanted out. Corey could be in the city in a couple of hours, and with her ship, they could be halfway across the galaxy by Christmas. They hadn't screwed with any intergalactic politics lately. That could be fun. He didn't trust the bats not to mess with his stuff, so he'd need to pack up his arsenal. But that'd take him a few minutes, tops. He could be out of the city in a half hour and meet Corey somewhere that wasn't Gotham. She'd find them a warm planet to go screw around on. It'd be good. He hated the cold, and Gotham just kept getting colder anyway. Somewhere warm on an entirely different planet than Batman. That's what he needed. He was about to dial Corey's number when he faltered, remembering the 30-plus kids beneath his feet. He couldn't just up and abandon them now. The peace in Crime Alley was still tentative. Jason had no doubt that Maroney and whoever else would jump right in the second people knew the Red Hood was gone. Not to mention, there was no chance that any of the kids would go to the orphanage if he wasn't around, to call in case it turned out to be just like everything they dealt with before. If Jason left, they'd have no reason to trust his word. And then the girls would be out of protection, too. God, that was just unfair. Jason wanted out. There had to be a way, surely. Tim could keep an eye on the kids. But Lisa, she was doing okay, but she was far from all right. Jason couldn't just abandon her. She was only 6, and she didn't have anyone. He had at least been 9 when he ended up on the street. Maybe he didn't have to leave the planet, or even the country. Maybe he could just get out of Gotham, head south for warm weather. Back to their island, maybe. Back through Florida. Maybe he could even take Lisa with him. He, Roy, and Corey could take her to Disney World. Corey would probably get a real kick out of it. Roy, even more so. Tim could look after the kids. Jason could hope that they trusted Tim and Dick enough to try the orphanage, even if he wasn't there. The chances weren't good. And then there was no way Bruce would leave Jason alone if he had a kid with him. Hell, he'd probably come after him for kidnapping or child endangerment or something equally ludicrous. Jason raked his hands through his hair, angry, frustrated, and just so damn tired. What the hell was he supposed to do? How on earth was he supposed to get out of Gotham when he was the only one holding Crime Alley together? He couldn't just abandon these people the way he'd been abandoned. But he couldn't stay. He couldn't. He didn't know how long he sat there, huddled in the cold December air, mind running circles around his non-existent options. But he was eventually distracted by his phone buzzing. Again. For a second, Jason really just wanted to chuck it off the roof of the warehouse. But it was Jamie's number, and this time it was a text, not a call. Jamie.
There's a woman here who needs your help.
Jason squeezed his eyes shut. This is what he got for helping people. Stuck. The worst part was he didn't really even have a choice. It was the only part of Bruce's conditioning that he never managed to shake. If someone needed help, Jason had to go. Every damn time. He took a breath and held it in his lungs for a moment, letting them start to burn before he let it out in a heavy sigh. Then he dragged himself upright and turned towards Jamie's. This didn't mean he wouldn't still leave. If he did decide to help this chick, he could still figure out a way to get out of Gotham without everything in Crime Alley falling to hell. The sun was rising by the time Jason arrived outside Jamie's apartment. The light inside was on, and her window was purposefully unlocked. Jason opened it and moved through, easily spotting the women on the couch, three steaming cups of tea on the coffee table. Jamie smiled, looking relieved to see him. Thanks for coming. Jason waved it off, burying his mess of emotions deep down. The other woman was sitting on the couch by Jamie, shoulders hunched and arms wrapped stiffly around herself. She was trembling slightly, and the side of her face was a mottled mess of bruises. Her eyes kept darting to Jason fearfully, and she was rather pale. He took a wide loop around her to the open armchair, not wanting her to feel caged in. "That for me?" he asked Jamie, nodding to the third cup of tea. Jamie smiled. Stinging nettle again. Nice. Worked pretty damn well last time, he said, using the tea as an excuse to remove his helmet. It helped the other woman relax a little, and if both hands were occupied by the teacup, it would seem less likely he'd suddenly pull a weapon. So, what can I do for you ladies? He asked, lounging back in the armchair with his tea.
I need... the woman started and faltered. Jamie said you help people, she finally managed.
When I can, Jason replied shortly, because he was feeling a little bitter about it at the moment. Helping people was why he was currently trapped in Gotham. Helping people was what had gotten him into this mess in the first place. Just had to go save the damn planet. Had to let the damn planet eater feed off of his memories. Look how well that turned out for him. The woman sniffed a little.
Could you help me?
She asked, and looked so damn desperate that something in Jason just gave up. He needed time to figure out how to get out of Gotham with everything falling to pieces anyway. He could help her while he was at it. Jason abruptly felt utterly disgusted with himself. He was such a goddamn sap. Yeah, I can help you, Jason promised her, just barely managing to keep the resignation out of his tone. What's your name?
Maggie Wilson, she replied.
What's your problem, Maggie?
His name is Douglas Cooley. I live in an apartment on 20th Street, and he bought it a few months ago. And a couple other apartment buildings, too. And he's been making everyone pay extra rent. For insurance, he says. But really, it's just a cheap protection racket. People who can't pay have sudden accidents. My husband ran off a while ago, and I've got two kids to look after. I've been trying, but I just can't come up with all the money he wants.
He do that to you? Jason asked, nodding to the side of her face. Maggie grimaced.
His nephew pushed me down the stairs, claimed it was an accident, but he did it in front of my kids. They're terrified, and I am too, she admitted. He's given me another week, but if I can't pay, I don't know what he's gonna do.
Single mother with kids, just trying to make it through the week. Jason couldn't have said no, even if he tried. He really was a sap.
I'll take care of it, Jason promised. You've got a week. Just relax, enjoy Christmas with your kids, and I'll have Cooley handled before your deadline is up. I promise. In the meantime, here's my work number. If he tries anything else, call me immediately.
Maggie looked like she was about to cry from sheer relief.
Thank you so much.
Your kids have any Christmas presents?
I put some money away, but I had to use it to buy another week.
Jason pulled some bills out of his pocket and passed them to her before moving to the window. Thanks for the tea, Jamie.
Anytime,
Jamie replied as he made his escape.
Great! Just fucking great!
Jason grumbled to himself as he moved back to the rooftops and headed to his apartment, entering through his balcony, as was his usual custom. It didn't feel like the haven he'd been building it into, though. Instead, it felt like a prison. Batman was back in Gotham, and Jason couldn't leave. He couldn't deal with this right now. He didn't want to deal with this right now. So instead, he focused himself on the more immediate problem of Douglas Cooley. It would be more easily fixed anyway. The main problem lay in the fact that Jason still wasn't set up for this kind of work. He hadn't returned to Gotham with the intention of getting back in the game. When he was here before, when he was here to screw Bruce over and kill the Joker, he'd come fully prepared. He set up shop, acquired all the tools and tech he needed, and he went at it seriously. When Jason came back, he hadn't planned on doing anything more than getting his head straight, letting familiar territory, places that were his, settle all the things that had been shaken loose in his mind. He really hadn't planned on staying longer than it took Dr. Tompkins to figure out what brought him back to life. That hadn't panned out, though, and Jason ended up tied down instead. Now he had work to do, but he lacked the tools and resources to do it. He didn't trust that the main bases he'd operated out of before hadn't been compromised by the bats, so using his old equipment was a risk. Barbara was an option. Tim, too. But could Jason get info from them without them turning around and telling Bruce exactly what he was up to? He loved Babs, but despite the almost amicable way they'd worked together with Donald, he doubted he was in her good graces after everything he'd pulled when he came back. If it was a choice between him and Bruce, Jason didn't think she'd side with him. And he honestly didn't know about Tim. He had no way of guaranteeing Bruce wouldn't immediately know he was researching Cooley. And then Bruce would butt into Jason's business, and no, Bruce had no more right to Jason's life. Any of it. Jason collapsed on his couch, raking his hands through his hair. Maybe he didn't really need resources to deal with Cooley. He could spend a few days watching the man, digging for what he could find without needing to hack too deep into the man's financials. If the man had no real ties to anyone else, if he wasn't working for anyone else, then he could deal with the issue directly without everything. He could terrify Cooley into signing over his properties and then get him arrested for whatever. He wasn't a bat, and he didn't actually need to do this legally. He was not above planting evidence against the man and getting him arrested for something after he signed over his properties. He didn't need the bats or their intel to do the job. But then, what to do with the buildings once Cooley signed them over? Jason had no interest in being a landlord. They'd be just another thing trapping him in Gotham. There was nothing for it. Jason texted Tim. Jason,
how does Wayne Enterprise feel about starting a few affordable housing programs in Crime Alley?
As usual, Tim's reply was immediate. Tim,
depends on whether or not the properties are obtained legally.
Jason,
properties will be in the name of an alias. Only illegal because I'm technically dead.
Tim,
under your name, and then you sell them to WE?
Jason,
for a steal. Profit will be evenly distributed to current tenants. The Wayne Foundation can use the properties to try out their new affordable housing program they've been developing. Tenants included.
Tim.
I'm betting they'll go for it.
Jason let out a breath. That was a start. And with it being designated as affordable housing, rent would be decided based on individual income. They could probably even get a few people off the street and into the buildings. He'd let Tim and the Wayne Foundation take over that project. It'd be good PR for them. The people wouldn't have to pay more than they could afford, and it'd be off of Jason's shoulders and one less thing he'd have to worry about when he did manage to get out of Gotham. Everybody wins. Everyone except Cooley. But fuck him. All he had to do was get Cooley to sign over the properties, and then it'd be a job well done. Jason.
Good. Keep B out of it and away from me. Everyone else, too.
He tossed the phone to the couch, not interested in getting any further reply. Instead, he snatched up his despairingly civilian laptop and set up a few searches to get what he could on Cooley's financials. That done, Jason had nothing more to distract him from the Bruce situation. And that wasn't okay, because he couldn't fucking handle it right now. He was tired, but there was no way he'd be able to sleep. Not with Bruce and the conundrum of how to get out of Gotham. He changed into some raggedy sweatpants and a tank top, but he felt antsy being out of his armor, and he couldn't just sit still and wait for his searches to finish. Fuck it, Jason grumbled, turning to the pile of cabinets and countertops waiting to be installed in his kitchen. He needed something to do with his hands, and it was as good an option as anything. He'd already done all the research and discussed everything intensively with Bill. He'd gotten another circular saw. He had all the equipment and the tools. He knew what to do, and it was better than sitting there agonizing over things he had no way of changing. Jason moved to the kitchen and started pulling everything out of his cabinets. He always thought better when he had something to do with his hands anyway. He shut everything about Bruce and Cooley out of his brain and let his mind drift between the task at hand and possible options that would allow him to get out of Gotham and keep all his people safe. After the cabinets were cleared, he grabbed the electric screwdriver and started removing them from the wall. He was careful with the screws, stashing them away so he could reuse them when he went to install the new cabinets. They fit the lead anchors already embedded in the brick, and Jason was keeping the same cabinet placement, so he wouldn't need to drill any new holes or install new anchors. It was awkward work to do alone. He had to be able to brace the cabinet while he removed all the screws. And when he went to install the new cabinets, he had to use crates to prop the cabinet up at the right height for him to secure it. And he had to make sure it was perfectly level. It would have been much easier with Tim or someone there to help him. But he didn't want to talk about Bruce. He didn't want to talk about anything, really. So he left his phone where he'd tossed it on the couch and managed on his own. It wasn't too difficult once he'd figured out how best to prop up the cabinets. When he managed that, it went pretty quickly, and then he was ready to take out the old sink and the countertops and lower cabinets. By the time he was unscrewing the lower cabinets and dragging them out to his balcony for some salvage people to pick up after Christmas, he was dirty and sweaty and the sun was steadily moving higher in the sky, but his mind was quiet and he felt calmer. Not so calm that he'd be able to sleep, but calm enough that he no longer felt the need to crawl out of his own skin just to get away. He wasn't great, but for the moment he was coping, and that was good enough. Jason didn't bother with the drawers and cabinet doors once he got all the cabinets secured in place. He'd need to wait until after he had the countertops and sink installed, before he put the drawers back in and reattached the doors. The countertop and sink would be tricky. He'd done all the measurements, and he had enough butcher block for the countertops, but he'd have to make the cuts himself, and he wanted to join the countertops at a 45-degree angle in the corner instead of a 90-degree angle. That would require precise measurements and smooth cuts, and Jason didn't feel like tackling that first. The piece for the island was already cut, though, so Jason turned his attention to it. Before he secured it to the island, he had to sand it down with several different grades of sandpaper for the countertop to be perfectly smooth. It was time-consuming, but the repetitive motions were calming and helped keep his mind quiet. When he was finished, he secured the butcher's block to the island by drilling screws up through the top of the island. That done, he stood back and surveyed his work.
It looked good, he decided, with a slight curl of his lips. Of course, the drawers weren't in, the cabinet doors weren't on, and he still needed to seal the butcher's block. But it looked good. Good enough that Jason wanted to get the rest of the countertops secured as well. Which meant he had to suck it up and start measuring for the cuts. He also had to make the cuts for his new undermount apron front sink. It was huge, but it came with a cutting template, so hopefully it wouldn't be too complicated. Then he had to make cuts for where the two slabs of butcher's block would meet in the corner. There were also the cuts for either side of his large range top, stove, and oven. By the time he was done cutting and sanding the rest of the countertops, he was hot, sweaty, and dirty with sawdust stuck to his clothes, skin, and lightly dusting his hair. Most importantly, though, he needed a smoke, which was how Alfred caught him smoking on his balcony in mid-December in sweatpants and a wife beater. "Master Jason, honestly," the older man declared in frustration, "it's the dead of winter. Put on a coat at the very least, and dispose of the cigarette this instant." "Oh, come on, Alfie," Jason protested immediately. "I'm smoking it outside. You can't complain about your lungs if I'm smoking outside. Besides, this is my apartment. I can smoke if I want to. Haven't we been through this already?" "Irrelevant," Alfred declared shortly, plucking the cigarette out of Jason's hand and ushering him inside. "And I can complain about the damage you are doing to your lungs. No smoking in my presence, Master Jason. Now, come inside before you catch a cold." Jason snorted. "And here I thought you were going to say before I catch my death." Alfred gave him a look. "You are the only one who finds those comments amusing, Master Jason." He then turned to survey Jason's kitchen. "I see you've been keeping yourself busy. Your kitchen seems to be coming along. It will look very fine when it's completed," Alfred remarked. "Is your oven still functional?"
"Yeah, I haven't ordered the new appliances yet. I turned the water off, though. I have to install the sink before I secure the countertop over it."
"It's an undermount sink?" Alfred asked, looking pleasantly surprised. Jason pointed to where the sink was set out, waiting to be installed, and Alfred nodded approvingly.
"I think that will be quite lovely, Master Jason."
Jason cracked a smile. "Yeah, I think so too. Thanks, Alfie." He might not want to see anyone else, but Alfred had always been an exception to so many of Jason's rules. Besides Corey and Roy, Alfred's company was the only company Jason felt like he could handle at the moment. It was hard, though. Jason had no illusions about who would have his loyalty if it came down to it. But he still needed Alfred. Bruce had always wanted Jason to be another dick, but Alfred was never like that. He never expected or wanted Jason to be anyone other than who he was. The old butler simply expected him to be the best that he could be. He had accepted him without complaint when Jason had desperately needed acceptance. Though he would rather cut out his own tongue than admit it out loud, he needed that acceptance just as desperately now. Especially since Bruce was home and was no doubt already harshly judging every little thing Jason touched. Alfred slid a covered dish into the oven and turned it on, and Jason shook off his brooding thoughts. He rolled his eyes at Alfred and pointed out, "I am still capable of cooking for myself."
"And yet, you still refrain from doing so," Alfred retorted immediately.
"I've been busy."
"Indeed. Now, shall we see about installing your new sink?"
"You want to help?"
Jason asked, surprised. "I am capable of more than just cooking, cleaning, and pulling bullets out of troublesome vigilantes, Master Jason,"
Alfred declared loftily, as he took off his jacket and began to roll up the sleeves of his white dress shirt. Jason hesitated, but only for a moment. He needed this, and just this once he was going to let himself have it. He gave Alfred a small smirk. "All right, then." With Alfred's help, they got the new sink installed and the water hooked up. They carefully secured the countertop around it and used a waterproof caulk to seal the small space between the countertop and sink. Once they were done securing the rest of the countertops, Jason mixed some of the sawdust with the wood paste and used that to fill the seam where the corners met. It was a tip Bill had given him to make sure the seam blended well with the counters.
"Well, Master Jason, you won't be washing dishes in your bathroom any longer," Alfred said, looking over the sink in satisfaction.
Jason grinned. Nope, got a giant kitchen sink for that now.
You're not interested in a dishwasher? Alfred asked.
Eh, Jason replied ambivalently. It's kind of an unnecessary cost in Crime Alley. More money, higher utility bill. And because there wasn't one already, I'd have to figure out a way to hook it up to the water line. And that would mean tearing up the floor or something. I don't really see the point.
Alfred nodded. I see. If you'd like to go ahead and attach the cabinet drawers and doors, I can start sealing the countertops. Then, once you are finished, you can finish the seal and I'll put away the contents of your kitchen.
Yeah, sure, Jason said, pleased that he'd have everything finished by the late afternoon. He had to do several coats of the waterlocked seal, and it required at least 12 hours to dry and another light sanding in between coats. So really, it'd be a couple of days before it was officially complete. But that was just semantics.
Master Bruce is back home, Alfred remarked easily, once he was rubbing in the seal and Jason was attaching doors.
Jason tensed dramatically, and Alfred rolled his eyes heavenward.
Dear Lord, Master Jason, the two of you, I'm not asking you to come to the manor, or even to see him. I only bring it up because I'd like you to get used to the idea. I have greatly enjoyed being able to spend time with you again, and though it is selfish of me, I'd rather not have that change. I know where you stand with him. He let the Joker live after he'd taken your life. Therefore, you feel like he chose the Joker over you. I assure you, he did not. He came very close to killing the Joker, but he didn't in the end. He would have lost himself if he had. He very nearly lost himself anyway. You don't understand what losing you did to him, Jason. Just like he doesn't understand what being murdered by that monster did to you. But can you really tell me that not taking a life when he had another option is an unforgivable offense?
Jason's hands fisted on the cabinet door he'd been securing. He would have done it for Dick, he said quietly. He'd do it for Damien.
Master Bruce does not love you all unequally, Master Jason, Alfred stated, voice firm. He would have been broken by Master Dick's death, just like he was broken by yours. If he would do it for Master Damien, it is only because he's lost so much already. Because he already suffered through the death of one son, he might not be able to bear the death of another. But I promise you, it wouldn't be because he loves Damien more. He loves all of you. You're all his sons, Jason.
Jason finished screwing the door in place before he moved off the stepladder and turned fully towards Alfred. Even if that were true, and I'm not saying it is, because I don't think I'm buying what you're selling, Alfs. But even if you are right, there's no way we can ever have that back again. The things I did to get to him, that doesn't just go away. The way I work, what I'm willing to do to protect my people, the things I see as necessary, that's not going to change either. And you know how he feels about it. And whether you agree or not, he did choose the Joker. He's still choosing the Joker. We all know he's going to break out of Arkham again eventually, and when he does, more people will die. How many people before it's enough? I certainly wasn't enough. And yeah, I get it now. Batman can't kill, whatever. But I'm not asking Bruce to do it anymore. I'm just asking him to let me. I'm not Batman. I can do what he can't. Why won't he just let me?
Alfred stripped off the gloves he'd been wearing, moved over to Jason, and placed his hands on Jason's shoulders. Don't you understand, Master Jason? He asked, looking up at Jason with a gentle expression. You are worth too much to him for him to allow you to do that. He doesn't want to keep you from killing the Joker because he wants the Joker alive. He wants to keep you from being a murderer. He wants you to have a life, to be whole and happy. He would never sacrifice you for that monster.
Jason shook his head. That ship has sailed, Alfie. I've killed a lot of people and never lost sleep over any of them. The ones I do lose sleep over are the ones that are still alive. I know what kind of person Bruce believes that makes me, and it's not a person that fits into his family. But I can't ever be whole while he's still alive. For as long as he lives, it will never be over, Alfred. Don't you get that? Alfred squeezed his shoulders. You are whole now, Jason. We all have our traumas. We all have our scars. While they may still affect us, they have not overcome us. You've already triumphed over the Joker. He sought to break you, and you came back even stronger. He would have had you go as mad as him, and yet here you are, building yourself a home and living your life with infinite compassion towards the helpless and abandoned. Can you not see how proud that would make your father? You're doing so much good, and you care so strongly. He hates the Joker, but you are his son. He could never sacrifice you, no matter how much that monster deserves to die. After everything we've all been through, no one in this family deserves to have to do it. I'd be happy to do it, Jason retorted. Clenching his jaws, he glanced at his windows, uncomfortable with the amount of emotion in Alfred's gaze. It wouldn't be a sacrifice. I'd enjoy the hell out of it. That may be, but at the very least, you killing the Joker would mean a trial. And though you've demonstrated you are perfectly capable of avoiding the law, I must confess we much prefer having you here unhindered, having you free. This family has been through so much already. It doesn't need to be torn any further. Jason shook his head, but could see there was no point arguing any further. I think we're going to have to agree to disagree, Alfie, he replied, letting the tension fall away from his shoulders. I suppose that is fair enough, Alfred replied, releasing his shoulders with a final squeeze. Although I do think you and Master Bruce will need to have an actual conversation about these things eventually, unless you both plan to pretend the other doesn't exist. I know repression is a familial trait, but it does get tiresome. Jason snorted. Hey, pretending like he doesn't exist sounds like a winning strategy to me. If he'll go for it, I'm totally in. Alfred hummed disapprovingly. I await the day some flashy Gotham villain creates a toxin that induces the victims into voicing every little thing they feel. When that day comes, I plan on tying every single one of you up and dosing you with it. Jason cackled, surprised but impressed. Damn, that's downright diabolical, Alfie. Yet necessary, I fear. You are all hopeless on your own. That's why we have you, Jason said, casting him a charming grin. Alfred wasn't impressed. Indeed, perhaps I could contract it out. Someone out there should be able to create the formula. Let's hope not, Jason replied, returning to his stepladder, intending to move on to the next cabinet. Alfred interrupted him. Oh, the casserole smells ready. Perhaps we should break for an afternoon meal. Judging by your state of mind when I arrived, I somehow doubt you managed to eat breakfast or lunch. Heaven knows you didn't sleep. I'm a big boy, Al, capable of making my own poor life choices. Go clear the table. I'll find us some dishes, Alfred directed. And really, what else could Jason do but hurry off to follow his orders? Batman may have been the one to train and condition them, but it was Alfred who had them all wrapped around his fingers. That was okay, though. If there was one person in the world that Jason trusted with his life and well-being, it was Alfred Pennyworth. Hey, Jason said solemnly. Alfred turned, giving Jason his full attention. I don't really know what's going to happen now that he's back, but I've liked being able to hang out with you, too. If I do end up leaving Gotham, I promise I'll keep in touch. Alfred's expression softened, and he moved forward, surprising Jason as he wrapped his arms around him in a hug. I will hold you to that, Master Jason. Thank you. Jason stood, stunned for a moment, before he allowed himself to settle and wrap his arms around Alfred in return. Alfred didn't immediately release him, and when he spoke again, his voice was a little strained. I know it hasn't always seemed like it, Master Jason, and I'm sorry that it hasn't, but you are loved, you are cared for, and you are sorely, sorely missed. I cannot express to you how much. I am so, so glad to have you back again. Jason's throat tightened, and he swallowed thickly, squeezing his eyes shut to ward off any tears. Unable to speak, he simply nodded. Alfred released him and patted his shoulder gently before turning back to the oven.
Jason pretended like he didn't see the old man dabbing at the corners of his eyes, and Alfred graciously didn't mention the way Jason's hands trembled slightly as he cleared off the table. By the time the table was set, they were both fully composed once more.